Hey, what's happening? Thanks for joining us this evening on the South Central Indiana News Network. You're listening to What's Happening, where we highlight the local news and events for Bloomington and the surrounding region. Skip Daly here, joined by the one and only Julie Beasley. Julie, have you had a good week?
I've had a great week. The sun has been out, so it's been a good week. I think everyone's doing well. How about you, Skip?
Spring is pretty much here.
I'm
hoping it stays this way as well. But you know what? We have an action-packed show today, so we're going to get right into the thick of things. It is the 5th of March, and we're going to take a look back at this week in history. On March the 1st, 1781, the Articles of Confederation went into effect in the United States. On March the 2nd, 1983, compact discs and compact disc players were released for the very first time in the United States. Those were previously available in Japan, but they made their debut here in the U.S. of A. in 1983. On March the 3rd, 1951, Jackie Brenston and Ike Turner recorded Rocket 88, and that was the very first rock and roll record. And on March the 4th, 1837, the city of Chicago was incorporated. And on March the 5th, 1770, five Americans, including Crispus Attucks, were fatally shot by British troops in an event that would contribute to the outbreak of the American Revolutionary War 5 years later. That was the Boston Massacre. And our celebrity birthday today, a happy 55th birthday to Michael Irvin, Hall of Fame wide receiver with the Dallas Cowboys.
Well, today on the show, we welcome Maya Michelson with the Indiana Arts Commission and our community update brought to us by the Porthole Inn at Lake Lemon. But first, your local news headlines are brought to you by American Senior Benefits of Bloomington. Providing innovative and smart money options for life and health insurance and investments is American Senior Benefits of Bloomington, online at asb.com. And by Brothers Carpet Cleaning, the region's best-reviewed carpet cleaning business. You can find them online, carpetcleaningbrothers.com. Now, Skip, tell us what's happening.
Mayor John Hamilton has announced that he will appoint Bloomingtonian Donald Griffin Jr. as deputy mayor, succeeding Mick Renneisen, who has announced his retirement to be effective on April the 23rd. Griffin, the owner of Griffin Realty Holdings, is a Bloomington native with decades of community service and leadership. As deputy mayor, he will coordinate and oversee 16 city departments and 850 city employees working to implement the Hamilton administration's policies and goal. Griffin will assume the office when Renneisen departs and earn an annual salary of $112,000.
Bloomington City Council voted not to designate legal locations for the region's homeless to set up camp in a 4-4 tie earlier this week. Councilmember Sims was unable to attend the vote due to a family emergency, and because the measure did not receive a majority approval, it ultimately failed. There was speculation that while the intent is noble, that the proposal was just not well presented, including not publicizing the reality that this would cost the city Parks and Recreation Department around $500,000 annually to upkeep such an encampment. Moving forward, any council member wishing to further pursue the matter will need to propose new legislation, considering this vote was rejected.
As of March the 4th, hours of operation for Monroe County bars have been extended. County Health Department Public Information Officer Kathy Hewitt says bars may now close at 2 a.m. rather than 1 a.m., and restaurants that do not serve alcoholic beverages do not have to close early. All restaurants and bars had to close previously at 1 a.m. when Monroe County entered the advisory orange level on the state COVID map back in November.
The Indiana Department of Health has lowered the minimum age to receive the COVID-19 vaccine to 50 years of age. The addition of the new Johnson & Johnson vaccine has helped Indiana lower eligibility twice in the last week. Dr. Lindsay Weaver with Indiana Department of Health Chief Medical Officer said the Johnson & Johnson vaccine also enabled the state to create three mass vaccination sites. State Health Commissioner Dr. Chris Box said she's cautiously optimistic the state will be able to continue quickly expanding eligibility. Health officials say the expansion of eligibility makes the vaccine available to more than 400,000 Hoosiers. Hoosiers 50 and older account for 35% of the state's population, but 98% of its COVID-19 deaths and 80% of hospitalizations. Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb has also announced that Indiana teachers are now available for the COVID vaccine, regardless of age, as part of the Federal Retail Pharmacy Program.
Republican Senator Todd Young announced his re-election bid in a video posted online this past Tuesday. Young discussed his support of the President Trump administration and said he believes he's lived up to his oath and kept his word, but more work remains. Young's campaign fund reported a 2020 surplus just shy of $2.4 million in reserve. And those are your local headlines. We'll be back with more of what's happening after this quick message.
Are you concerned about your life insurance coverage during these uncertain times in history? I'm Adam Beasley with American Senior Benefits right here in Bloomington, and we can help you find the best coverage for you and your family. We work for you to find the best plan out of more than 150 companies. We can compare your existing coverage or start a brand new plan from newborn to 89 years old. From term to permanent, we'll find what's best for you. Call us at American Senior Benefits, 812-631-2305.
When you're preparing to buy a new home, the last thing you should have to worry about is the safety of your possessions. Allow Big Boys Moving to professionally oversee the transport of your precious belongings. Big Boys Moving is locally owned with years of experience. Whether your relocation is local or long distance, allow Big Boys to move you with an attitude of gratitude. Call today, 812-947-1479 or online at bbmoving812.com.
Welcome back. You are listening to What's Happening on the South Central Indiana News Network. And we love those tunes provided by Jen Christie, and she'll be with us and providing some music with us for the next month. Our community update is brought to us by the world famous family friendly Porthole Inn. Turning 65 this year, the Porthole is Southern Indiana's longest continuous live music venue. You'll love their famous pizzas, steaks, and catfish. Open for takeout. You can check them out online at portholeinn.com or on their Facebook page. On behalf of the Bloomington Redevelopment Commission, the City of Bloomington has issued a request for information from qualified real estate developers to submit their proposals for potential adaptive reuse for the Court Administration Building as a long-term affordable or mixed-income multifamily residential project. The opportunity to develop the property at the northwest corner of West First Street and South Rogers is an early result of the completion of the Bloomington Hospital Reuse Master Plan. You can find more on BloomingtonHospitalSite.com. Responses to the RFI, which has been posted at bloomington.in.gov/RFP, are due by Friday, April 2nd at 4 p.m.
All right. Well, Julie, today we have joining us someone I can't believe that we haven't had on the show in the past, Maya Michelson. Maya, now you have been involved in the arts ever since I've known you, and that's been for, I don't know, about 10 or so years here in the city of Bloomington. But you've moved on to the state of Indiana, working within the arts, and your job, if I have this correctly, is the Deputy Director of the Indiana Arts Commission. Is that right?
That's right. It sounds super important. And although I am a deputy, I do not have a badge, which is kind of a bummer. But
I think you deserve one.
I think so, too. I like to just sort of internally wear a badge. So, yeah. Weird thing about state agencies. For some reason, we have some leadership titles have the word deputy in them. So I don't know where that came from. But anyway, old school. So.
Well, it is old school and it's fancy and you deserve fancy title. Let's get into your personal background in the arts. How did you get involved with all of this?
Great question. I was a theater major a bazillion years ago, got my undergraduate degree in theater, and realized pretty quick after some time as a performer and auditioning and so forth that I really enjoyed what we'd call in theater the front of house experience. In other words, I really enjoyed being the box office manager, helping on the sort of front side, the patron experience, helping people experience the art as opposed to creating it myself. And so that led me in career-wise into arts management. I worked in theater companies, children's museum management, art center, festival management. When I came to Bloomington, I ran the Bloomington Area Arts Council for a while. Previous to that, I ran the gallery of the Bloomington Area Arts Council. And then for 8 years, I was Assistant Economic Development Director for the Arts for the City of Bloomington with previous Mayor Mark Cruzan, who established that position and asked me if I'd take it, which was a great opportunity. It'd been my first time to work in government, which was fascinating. So especially Bloomington governments, really interesting. So all kinds
of, that's a whole nother show.
Yeah, right. That's a whole nother show. Well, that's like a whole nother mini series, isn't it? So anyway, so I did that for about 8 years. And then back in 2015, I moved up to the state of Indiana and to the Arts Commission there in the state of Indiana. So yeah.
So that brings us to the obvious next question. What in the world is the Indiana Arts Commission? And what is your primary role with them?
Yeah. So what does the Arts Commission do? Yeah, great question. So let's go back into the misty mists of time, back when the National Endowment for the Arts was founded many, many decades ago. At the same time the National Endowment for the Arts was founded, each state established its own arts council or arts commission to receive funds from the National Endowment for the Arts to help make arts happen in their states. And so there are 50 state arts councils, arts commissions. They're named different things. They're housed in different places in state government. I think maybe even one of them is a not-for-profit organization as opposed to being in state government. And then there are arts councils slash commissions in the U.S. territories as well, interestingly enough. So our beat is the entire state of Indiana. Our budget is about $4,700,000 and some change. And our mission is to support arts activity throughout the state. And we do that primarily as a funder. About 70-ish percent of our dollars go out to arts organizations and for arts projects, to cultural districts, to communities, and to individual artists. We're not as much a producer and presenter as we are a funder and a supporter and a connector. And so the bulk of our work, again, is in funding, but we do a lot of capacity building. We do a lot of education. We do a lot of artist training, entrepreneurship trainings, an area we're really deep in right now, community development. We've done just a little bit of public art here and there. But we really are the connector for the arts in the state, not only for artists and arts organizations to find funding, but for communities to find the great artists and arts organizations that exist in their communities and to experience the arts. So we literally work for every single person in the state. So it's a big mission, broad mandate. We think we deliver a great service to the citizens of Indiana.
You've given us a great overview of what the Arts Commission does, and I'm guessing the agency's really position and your role, I'm sure, has changed probably drastically in some way over the last 12 months. I'll throw a two-step question out to you. One, what does your role typically look like? You mentioned that you're working as funders through the Arts Commission. What is your role? And then two, how has your role really changed during the COVID-19 pandemic?
I'm the one that sort of keeps the trains running. So I handle the budget. This year, it will be almost 900 contracts, funding contracts. I work with the contract team to make sure all the grant contracts go out. I work on compliance for grant contracts. I am the HR director, the ethics director for the agency. Every state agency has a staff member who is assigned to handle ethics on behalf of the agency. Commissioner relations, because similar to a not-for-profit organization, we have a 15-member board of gubernatorial appointed commissioners who sort of function like a board of directors would at a not-for-profit organization. So they're the ones that actually make the funding decisions. They approve our budget. We recommend things based on peer-reviewed panels and so forth, but they're the ones that actually make the decisions, which make us a little unusual from other state agencies because we really pride ourselves in a lot of transparency. Citizens are involved in our funding from making the application to sitting on the review panel to actually approving the grant. Really big on transparency. And that's a big part of my role too, is making sure those processes are such that transparency continues from application to approval. So how's the gig changed over the last year? Well, really not much. Since March of last year, in fact, I'm rolling up to about my year anniversary of sort of working remotely. And by the way, I live here in Bloomington, so I'm a Bloomington person. I did, in the before times, commute to Indianapolis 4 to 5 days a week, and now I'm in Bloomington. But the work changed tremendously, not just for the agency, but for me over the past year, because obviously we represent a sector that has been hugely impacted by COVID-19. Theaters obviously have stopped operating. Some of them have, especially in Bloomington, worked really hard to stay engaged with audiences. But we had a really long period of time where a lot of cultural institutions were not doing any kind of public programming and struggling with trying to figure out what comes next. And so we were challenged as an agency to help navigate people through a crisis that we didn't know what the end of it looked like quite yet, trying to help be as responsive as we possibly can and give people as much encouragement and support and build capacity as best we can, again, with no sense of how the world was going to look like for them on the other side of the crisis. And frankly, we still don't know exactly what the arts are going to look like once we have herd immunity related to vaccinations and when people feel comfortable going out and how comfortable do they feel and what sorts of things are they going to want to do. So there's still a lot we don't know about what the sector is going to look like once we come back, what normal, I'm using air quotes here, what normal looks like post-pandemic. And a big part of our role not only was trying to help figure out the crisis while the crisis was going on, but then distributing a fair amount of relief funds through the federal government to arts and cultural organizations throughout the state. That was a huge, huge lift and what we've been working on for the last 12 months, more or less.
Well, Maya, that's a great transition. We're going to segue. Well, I'm going to coin a word here first. You're a great informationarian. You heard it here first. You're the information.
Write it down.
You're the informationarian of all of the funding and the assistance that is available to arts organizations, to venues, to artists themselves. But we're going to make our listeners wait and listen to our sponsors before we come back and allow you to open the floodgates of talking about what assistance is out there for our good friends in the arts world. You're listening to What's Happening on the South Central Indiana News Network.
This is Danny with Weathervane Insurance Solutions. Not only is it especially important for our economy to support local businesses these days, but as your local independent insurance agency, Weathervane Insurance can shop you around with dozens of carriers to ensure you receive the most competitive price and, of course, the best customer service. Find us on the web at weathervaneonline.com. That's weathervaneonline.com.
Welcome back. You are listening to What's Happening. Julie Beasley here along with Skip Daly. And again, we are joined by Maya Michelson with the Indiana Arts Commission. Now, Maya, before we went to commercial, we were talking about your role in the Arts Commission and how you're really working as a funder. The arts industry has greatly been hit during the pandemic. Can you talk to us a little bit about what funding is out there and available for people who work in the arts, who qualifies, and maybe what the steps are?
Sure. Great question. So if folks will visit our website, which is in.gov/arts, and click on the lower left-hand corner, you can see some of the resources that we have available. There are several federal programs that are out right now and another one that's about to be open. The Paycheck Protection Program is still accepting applications and the deadline for that is March 31st. So you can take a second draw if you've had a first draw. So that the link to that, of course, will take you to the Small Business Administration, who is administering that. But you can certainly take another whack at PPP and you should, or take a first one if you didn't do it last year for whatever reason. So that is available. Arts Midwest, which is a regional arts organization and one of our funders, is offering a program called GIG, some GIG grant. program. It stands for Grow, Invest, and Gather. And that is a presenting program for organizations that want to present an artist. And that can be a virtual presentation. And you can read more information about that grant program on our website. Again, that's Arts Midwest. The deadline for that application is May 3rd. We anticipate any moment now that the Small Business Administration will be releasing guidelines for the Shuttered Venues Operator Grant Program, otherwise known as SVOG. They have released several sets of frequently asked questions, and we expect the full guidelines to come out shortly. That will be for both presenting arts organizations like theater companies, like orchestras, like dance companies, as well as venues like the Buzzkirk Chumley or the Bishop potentially, or other kinds of venues that present performances. So catch the link on our website, and you can also sign up for what feels like hourly newsletters that we put out with information about these programs. And I am actually going to be the contact for the Shuttered Venues program, so folks can email me at the Arts Commission for more information about any of the programs I'm talking about. Again, we serve as connectors. We want to make sure we connect folks out there with resources. And then if you're an individual gig worker, don't forget that pandemic unemployment assistance is still available to you. So check out and go to the State of Indiana Department of Workforce Development to file that pandemic unemployment assistance claim. We also anticipate with President Biden's COVID relief bill that is in the Senate now, that there will be potentially some additional support and relief coming, both for organizations and individuals. We don't know what that will be yet, but we anticipate more relief will be coming. So stay tuned. Again, subscribe to our newsletter if you want more information about what's going on there. Or again, feel free to email me directly because I want to make sure people are taken care of. Both Skip and Julie were asking me earlier about what sort of resources are available related to reopening. If you're an organization or an artist thinking about how can I safely reopen, what should I be thinking about as an individual performer and safety and health and safety, we also have on our website great guidelines about what to be thinking about as an organization as well as an individual artist about how you can safely re-enter the world of performance and exhibits and so forth. Again, we're still figuring some of that out, but rest assured, we'll be putting all that sort of information on our website for you to check out. We really do want to be your primary resource related to getting back on your feet and getting back producing art in the community.
Maya, do you have one central location or do you know of one central location where information is out there for artists that are looking to get back into the swing of things, to know what the different guidelines are county by county or within the state in regards to their performances, whether they should book in advance based on their thoughts of this rule or that rule, or if the size of event gatherings are limited in one county versus another county or one city versus another city?
Yeah, great question. And we actually have some guidance on that. So if you'll contact me or hit up our website, there is information there. I mean, the challenge, as you both probably know, is that a lot of decisions obviously were made county by county. And so knowing what's allowed in X county isn't necessarily transferable to Y county. So we do have some guidance about where to look for that on our website. And if you can't find it, again, just email me directly and I'll be happy to steer you in that direction. And again, I would be looking for more guidance coming out from State Department of Health as through us about safe reopening as we start to see the thaw happen. Again, what we're hearing from the field is probably summer for outdoor performances, socially distanced, fall, you know, maybe a little bit more of that. Live indoor performances, that's going to come back more slowly. What we're going to see is people a little more hesitant potentially to go someplace and be shoulder to shoulder with someone. So I think you're going to be seeing a lot of organizations really err on the side of giving folks a lot of distance in performance venues and then audiences being really discriminating about where they go and what experiences they participate in. So I think there'll be more guidance out there. There's a lot of research related to what audiences preferences are related to when they're going to be comfortable coming back either into indoor spaces or to participate in outdoor spaces. So be looking for arts organizations to really be parsing that information and making decisions based on what it's telling them. I know Cardinal Stage, for example, did a survey, pretty comprehensive survey a couple of weeks ago, trying to get some indication of what local audiences would be comfortable with. A lot of organizations are taking it on themselves to sort of pull their audiences and get information. So what we've seen is great hand-in-hand work with our local and state Department of Health organizations. And so I would expect that to continue going forward.
Maya, this is a troubling time, as you're well aware, for artists and musicians and the entertainment world and all of the supporting cast of all of those jobs, those careers. If we're looking realistically at things not even really picking up until fall. Look into your crystal ball for us. I know we don't have a lot of time left, but look into your crystal ball and tell us, will funding continuously be made available to sustain these people's lives?
Great question. And I didn't mention this because, again, this program is about to wrap, but Governor Holcomb allocated $10 million in state CARES money for us to distribute to statewide arts organizations over the summer and fall, really, and into the winter. So we distributed more than about $10 million all around the state. And we got messages like, we think you may have saved our organization, or we're not going to have to close our doors. And thank you so much. You know, we're now able to pay our furloughed staff or keep from having to furlough people. So to this point, we feel like we've done a pretty decent job of helping keep organizations together and keeping them employing artists or keeping them from furloughing artists. And again, this Shuttered Venue Operator Grant Program, which we expect to get guidelines for imminently, I think will help performing arts groups, which have been, as we know, gobsmacked by this virus, because there are so many challenges in live performance related to the proximity of audience and the proximity of performers. And I do think that both Governor Holcomb and the federal administration have been very responsive to the needs of artists and arts organizations and recognizing arts and culture as a key part of community life and vibrancy and the importance of keeping those organizations together, body and soul, so that they can come back stronger than ever. I mean, the governor's very explicit instructions were, you know, he wanted that $10 million to be bridge funding to help organizations hang on until better times came. And we have absolute evidence that funding helped do that. So been huge.
We've run over our time, but we wanted to get as much information out there. This is important. These are people's lives that have been impacted greatly. So thank you for joining us. And we would like to stay in touch with you over the coming months. And we will share whatever information you would like to provide to us through our social media outlets as well. One more time before we get going, I want to make sure that website is correct. in.gov/arts.
You got it.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being with us. It was great to see you virtually here. And hopefully this will be the start of some communication here with what's happening.
Yeah, I'd love to come back and tell you more about relief programs for artists and arts organizations. And you guys were great. Thank you.
All right. We'd also like to thank our friends over at the Porthole Inn for sponsoring our community update. We'd also like to thank Jen Christie for providing this month's music. And on behalf of Julie and the entire team here at the South Central Indiana News Network, my name is Skip Daly. Join us each and every Friday as we keep you in touch with what's happening.
This was a production of the South Central Indiana News Network.